You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins!
Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the AU Wishbone Podcast. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm just introducing an episode, a blast from the past this week, as John and I feverishly prepare for a special throwback episode next week where we will be looking at the greatest tie games in Auburn's modern history, for better and for worse. I think that's going to be a very interesting topic, and we've been watching a whole bunch of games for this, and we've got a ways to go yet. So in the meantime, this week, I'm presenting... because several people have asked over the last few weeks that we've been doing these flashback games discussion, people have asked about certain games that were actually played while we had our show going. You know, one of our main criteria for choosing these games for our flashback episodes has been it needed to happen before we had a show. But there have been a few that happened kind of in the early days of our show, and we did entire episodes about them. So I went to the earliest days and dug up probably the first big Auburn win after we started doing this show, and that's the 2013 Texas A&M game. Now, it's going to be interesting to listen to what we had to say, because remember, going into the Texas A&M game, this was Gus's first season. We'd only played a handful of games at this point. We had a very tough, close game against Washington State, a very close last-second game against Mississippi State. And so very much like 2010, the team started slowly and built, and we really didn't know what we had at the time. It took a few weeks. It took winning and time to reveal just what sort of a team we actually had. So without further ado, here is John and me. Here are John and me. Talking about the win we had just had a couple of days before against Johnny Manziel's Texas A&M Aggies. Enjoy.
Here's the snap to Manziel. Pressure off the edge. He's flushed out. He's running around. He's in trouble. He's going down. The Tigers are going to win. The Tigers are going to win. Johnny Manziel goes down in a heap back at the 44-yard line.
So this kid going to be okay?
I don't know. Still unconscious.
I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, Jim Fife once said, "I have seen the impossible." John, I haven't seen the impossible. I've seen the very possible. The very possible. We were the better team, emphasizing team, and we won. And we could have and should have won by even more than we did. But I'll take it. Your thoughts?
At Western Carolina was tough. No, I mean, it was a great win. I mean, a huge win, a long time coming. And, you know, we felt like their defense was bad and Auburn could take advantage of it with a running game. But it really was a complete team effort, top to bottom, offense, defense, special teams. A lot of players made big plays and stepped in and made a difference. And it was an exciting game, too. I mean, those kind of games, very fun and entertaining. I mean, they're stressful, but at the same time, much more fun to watch than, for example, the 3-2 game over Mississippi State.
Yeah, I exactly. It nearly gives you heart failure, but but when it works out for the best, it's a good kind of heart failure, isn't it? So
it is.
Before we go any further, you had some special. I haven't checked with you beforehand, so you may just hate me even mentioning this. But this is so great. You've got to share real quick your special circumstances. My circumstances were that my wife and I got to watch the whole game in the living room while I was making chili dip and everything. And it was just a normal, you know, Saturday in Illinois watching the Tigers win a monumental victory. But what were your circumstances?
Well, I mean, this – you know, we both have lives outside of podcasting, and this kind of thing happens to me all the time. But I went camping with the scouts with my son, And so knowing, and my one of my oldest daughter had to work, so we knew we weren't going to get to watch the game. So we set the DVR to record it, and we decided we'd watch it Sunday after we got back. And so basically from Saturday morning on, I did not check the internet at all. And I didn't go on the internet, and no one in my family went on the internet other than I think my son went on there later to play Minecraft. But other than that, we didn't go on the internet. We didn't know the result of the game. We watched it late on Sunday and saw the result, and we were very happy.
And you did.
So it was a surprise to us. And I had told people that were with us, you know, some of the other guys had smartphones and stuff, and I said, don't tell me anything about college football.
It's amazing that you did not get spoiled.
Well, I was out in the woods. I wasn't, in a civilized area. But it is amazing, and I was very, very happy to not have the surprise. But it was fun.
I was emailing with your brother because you had told us both, you know, don't tell me anything. And I was emailing with him. He says to me, he doesn't know. And I said, I can't wait till he finds out. It's going to be like winning all over again.
And it was like winning all over again.
Yeah.
It was the best. I, you know what, though? I have to say it was great, but at the same time, you missed out on that live feeling that you have when you're watching the game and you know that every other Auburn fan is watching the game, and some of them are on Twitter, some of them are on email stuff, and they're all people are texting you. And that group feeling that we all went through it together, the heart attack victory together, is a great feeling too. So.
Yeah, I've had to do a few over the years that way too, and so I know exactly what you mean. And it is, with the advent of Twitter, I just about like have one eye on the game and one eye on my iPad, you know, constantly checking what people are saying and all, which as we'll get to in a little bit, basically on Saturday consisted of, why aren't they calling holding? That was what I was seeing over and over and over. But I have one other thing I got to get to before we really get into. We got a lot to talk about tonight. We're gonna just have to hurry up, no huddle the entire podcast. But I've got one other thing I want to mention as we lead off, because it figures into some of the things that you may have already heard and some of the things you'll be hearing later throughout the show. So I kind of have to explain it to those that haven't already figured it out, which is that, you know, we know that Johnny Manziel has a lot of nicknames. And I kept thinking as the game wore on that there was one other nickname that was out there for him, but I just couldn't quite put my finger on what it was. And then on his last play of the game, it hit me. It hit me just like that Auburn defensive lineman hit him. Down he went in a sack, right? Just crushed. The life crushed out of him on that last play. The life crushed out of Texas A&M's hopes. And it dawned on me that there's a major villain on The Sopranos, the New York mob boss that fought Tony, and his name was Johnny Sack.
So this kid gonna be okay?
I don't know. Still unconscious.
Is he married, children, anything?
Lives with his mother.
So forevermore, Johnny, you are now to me Johnny Sack. And
nice.
Yeah, and we're gonna have you've heard some already. You're gonna hear some more before the show is over. Thanks to the technological wonder that is YouTube. So we'll roll on now. I just wanted to explain that. All right. We always start with announcements. Do we have any announcements this week?
No, nothing exciting. As always, please have, if you have not already, go to your local bookstore or to Amazon and take a look for our books. Mm-hmm. The most recent of which is Decades of Dominance, the History of Modern Football in the Auburn Area from Pat Dye, the President. It's available on Amazon and paperback and Kindle and in J&M and in the Auburn University bookstore.
Yeah, people were asking me on Twitter and various places, you know, how this game compared, and we're going to talk a little bit about that later, compared to some other ones. And I thought, well, gosh, we have whole chapters in that book just on, you know, those great road wins. And
That's right. That would be a good place to start if you had those questions.
There you go. So, okay. I just appreciate everybody tuning in every week and listening. We have a ball doing this. Certainly I do. I'm sure John does. And we appreciate you taking the time to find us and listen to us every week very much. We've got listener questions, John.
We do. Lots of good questions this week. And in the future, if you want to send us a question, you don't have to wait till the day we're recording. If you think of something good during the week or during the game even, you could send it to @AUWishbone, and we'll be happy to talk about it the next chance we get. All right. Our first question I enjoy. It's very humorous. It's from Attitude, AU Attitude, basically. Yeah. Very
well-known Twitter personality, yes.
He is. He's funny. And the question is, Jake Holland, is he that slow or is he dragging a boat anchor?
Maybe it's left over from the last time we played Vanderbilt. I don't know.
It could be. And I don't like to make fun of Auburn players, but he is rather slow for a defensive player. And he does the best he can, but... he's not quick.
He has his advantages and he has his liabilities, and you just kind of have to live with both, you know. So there you go.
That's right. And there'll be some day down the road when some team wants to line up and run right at us in the middle, and he might be handy on that day. All right. Moving on. Our next question comes from Auburn Elvis, who said that a couple weeks ago we said Auburn's ranking ceiling was around 19 to 20.
Good gosh.
We did say that.
Has the world turned upside down completely?
It has. It's amazing.
It's amazing.
And he said, in exchange for an apology, you may have a mulligan, which we appreciate. We need a mulligan on that ranking ceiling because we've blown through that and kept on going.
Well, we're 11th in AP, right, and 11th in the mm-hmm. BCS, and we're going to win on Saturday, presumably.
Yep.
I don't know how high they'll jack us up. But, you know, it wasn't just that we won that got us this high. It's all the other stuff that happened at the same time. I mean, who could have predicted? This was possibly my favorite football Saturday in years, not just from an Auburn perspective, but because with the exception of Alabama, as the Solid Verbal guys put it, like, or whoever it was, those robots in Tuscaloosa, right, that just plod through their wins, you know, 45 to nothing or whatever mm-hmm. every week, with the exception of that, which was never in doubt, every game that I was rooting for the upset, it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Every game. I had my little girl and I were sitting in the chair watching the early game while everybody else was running errands and stuff, and I had my Missouri – I went to a discount place around here. I live in Illinois, and they had like Illinois and Missouri jerseys for like $5, you know. and that was probably paying too much. I felt later, gosh, I could have bought like a Chick-fil-A for that $5 instead, but I bought this Missouri jersey for some reason.
Oh my gosh.
But I whooped it out, man, and it was awesome. I had the Missouri jersey on during the
Do you know what player it's for?
I haven't got a clue. I don't even know what year it's for. But okay. So I posted a picture on Twitter. You didn't see it because you were on lockdown, obviously. And some guy, I forgot who it is. I apologize for forgetting who it was, but somebody tweeted back and said, keep digging in that bin. I want to see the Vanderbilt jersey.
All right. We're moving on. Our next question comes from Matthew Flowers, at Matt K.E. Flowers. And he says, given an injured Georgia, Tennessee on the rise, and the win at A&M, what would you see as a reasonable final win-loss ranking and a bowl game?
Well, that blends into the question we didn't ask from Auburn Elvis, which is how high are we going to get ranked? So let's kind of address all of that at once.
Okay.
Yeah, Georgia is injured. They're going to be healthier when we play them, unfortunately. That's kind of the way it goes. But
they're not going to be all the way healthy, though.
No,
they're still a shell of the team that they were week one.
Yeah, that's true. Tennessee does look kind of scary now. I'll be at the Georgia Literary Festival, so I'm going to be doing one of your deals that week.
Well, let's go real quick. You ready?
Yeah, go.
Florida Atlantic.
Win.
At Arkansas.
Win. Where are we now? 9-1?
Yes.
Okay.
At Tennessee.
Wait. No, we're 8-1 at that point, right?
Yes.
Okay, 8-1. So, at Tennessee. Dang, I mean... If that game was in Auburn, I'd feel great about it. If it wasn't the fact that Tennessee's looked so much better lately, they beat South Carolina. I mean, I know everybody lost. I know it was upset Saturday, but what do you think? What do you think about Tennessee?
I think they're improving, and I think they're – after Alabama, they're the second toughest team we're playing. I think they're better than Georgia. I think if they played Georgia again on a neutral field right now, they'd beat them.
Yeah, that's what worries me. So, well, I mean, if we lose to Alabama and if we lose to
– okay. So we're going to say we lose to Alabama. I think we could beat Georgia or Tennessee. Let's go that way.
Yeah. Okay. So that's 9-3.
That's right.
All right. Well, you and I are very conservative in these sorts of things. So
we are. We're not going crazy there. 9-3. Listen, We won three games last year. Who's going to win an SEC game?
Who is going to be disappointed if Auburn finishes this year 9-3, flips the numbers backwards from 3-9 last year? We were sitting here going 6-7. Dare we think? I mean, we were thinking 6-6. Dare we think 7-5? You know, ooh, let's get all radical 7-5. And we're going to be disappointed at 9-3? Come on.
No, look, we could screw up one of the other games, go 8-4, and we should still have a freaking parade. Absolutely. And build a statue of Gus Malzahn. Absolutely. Not even any question about it. From a bowl game perspective, I think bowl games are going to be excited to get Auburn because we have a good following of fans, we travel well, and I think, you know, they know that Auburn fans are happy about this team and interested in going. So,
and we've got a lot of mojo going right now. We're a buzz team around the country.
A lot of buzz, especially if we keep winning, the buzz will be really big. I think, you know, the way – it's shaking out, you know, Cotton Bowl, Capital One Bowl, Outback Bowl. Those are the kind of the three. We're not going back to Atlanta.
No.
That is not happening. So I think those are the three possibilities that are happening.
Yeah, I was saying I'm so happy. But the thing is, we've already probably played our way out of me getting to drive a couple hours down to Nashville and watch them in the Music City Bowl. So I'm not sad about that. I'm just like, well, you know. I thought this was going to be my year to see him in Nashville, and so now I'd have to go a lot longer, but that's fine. That's good. That's cool.
All right. Our next question comes from Pat Ringer.
I've heard of him.
Asks, would you consider Brett Bielema a hero after the South Carolina game where he shielded his players from the dangers of more plays?
More plays. Now, explain kind of what your younger brother here is talking about.
Well, he's talking about the joke about the hurry-up offense and the threat posed to it. And then he's talking, I think, about Spurrier's comments about, you know, getting crushed. So
Right. Yeah. Oh, and Spurrier was in classic form, by the way, after that game, saying
That was the best.
I felt kind of bad, you know, them having homecoming like that. Guys, that's too bad. Yep.
All right. Next question. We're moving on.
Okay.
Hurry up, no huddle, whole game.
You're right.
A lot to go.
You're right.
At Matt Morton says, is there any way this Auburn team overlooks Arkansas in 2 weeks?
No.
I would hope not, considering our yearly struggles with them and the season we had last year. This game scares me more than any other. Thanks. Love the podcast.
Well, thanks, Matt, for that cool comment. We appreciate that. First, Arkansas makes me think of Bobby Petrino, and I think, I wonder how Bobby's doing right now. Is there anybody out there that's going, dang it, I wish we had just gotten Bobby Petrino as our coach? and I want to rise above and be better than that, and so I'm only going to go ha instead of lots of ha's, okay? No, there's no way we overlook Arkansas. Arkansas has a history. Pick up Season of Our Dreams. We talk, we have a whole chapter about the Hog Hex, right? And how to break it.
No, so I don't think we overlook that. I mean, listen. It's a road game against an SEC team. It's going to be tough. I don't think there's any way that Auburn overlooks that game. I think Auburn's going to be prepared and focused for that. And I think they're going to take it seriously because, Arkansas can play well at home. They hung with Texas A&M there.
Well,
so, I mean, just because the good news for us is we're catching them on a big losing streak, but they're going to get a week off to get it together before they play us.
Their morale's got to be down, though. They've gotten shellacked the last couple of weeks. You know, it's funny. This is, you know, Gus is our second of the last three coaches to be from Arkansas. And the last Arkansas coach that we had would take us over there and get beat pretty solidly. So hopefully Gus doesn't have Tubbsitis when it comes to going back to his home state.
It's a tough place to play. It's kind of a weird place. You never know what the weather's going to be either and stuff. So, All right. Our last question tonight comes from Jordan Hare Jargon, who asks, what do you think had a greater impact on how good the defense, especially the defensive line, played, conditioning or playing lots of subs?
Oh, I think both. Don't you?
I do, too. I mean, I said this earlier. I think that, first, the conditioning of this team is excellent.
Yes.
You can really see it. Especially in those games early on when the other teams were playing a lot of snaps and it was hot, you know, those early season games, our team wasn't dragging. I mean, there were some guys on defense who were playing a lot of snaps and they weren't bending over. They weren't grabbing their waist or anything and you know, waving to come out. They were fine. They were making plays at the end of the game. So I think it's both of them, obviously. I think we do have a lot of depth and they rotate guys in a lot. And so that allows the starters and the good players to be fresh later in the game. and the offensive line's getting tired and worn down, and our defensive guys are still fresh. I think the conditioning of this team is great. Mm-hmm. It's excellent. And I think the depth is making a difference, too. I think we're playing a lot of guys, and they're making a lot of plays, especially defensive line. You can see it. And we're bringing those guys off the bench in there. Elijah Daniel and those other guys are coming in the second string and making plays and making things happen. And it's tough to say one or the other. If I had to pick one, I would say it's the depth. I'd say it's the mm-hmm. subs that are making – because, you know, when you bring, like, Elijah Daniel and Carl Lawson off the bench and, after a couple of series of playing – D Ford, those guys, it's not like the offensive line's getting a break.
Yeah, that's right. It reminds me of the Pat Dye era when we used to just rotate lineman after lineman and wear teams down. You are listening to the Wishbone podcast on the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, brought to you as always by Red Diamond Tea. Red Diamond, it's reminding you of Birmingham right here in Illinois. This is our special monumental victory edition. We're going no huddle, hurry up. Tempo, tempo. I'm imagining John right now hitching up his pants, chewing gum frantically, and jabbing his finger at the ground. Go, 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 snap the ball. So, we are now to the monumental victory. Auburn, Texas A&M. Where to begin?
The way to begin is the Auburn team was well prepared for this game.
Mm-hmm.
It is a tough place to play, a very dangerous offense, a weak defense. Auburn went in there with a good game plan. They knew what they needed to do, and they took care of it.
You know, it's fascinating when you picture Gus, more than probably any other coach I can remember, even Chizik, he is so low-key. You know, I was watching him in the press conference, and I kept comparing this game back. We're going to talk about what this game compares to. And I kept comparing this game to the 94 Florida game. Mm-hmm. And I was remembering how manic Terry Bowden would be after a game like this. And Gus was just as chilled, as calm, as cool. Just, you know, answering questions the same way in the press conference after the game as he would have like in March or something, you know. So
he was fired up on the field after the game.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. Somebody pointed that out to him and he said, oh, really? Oh, well, maybe so. You know, he was kind of smiled. But
the next thing is I think Auburn won this game like we've won the Ole Miss game on both lines of scrimmage. The offensive line, the defensive line were outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
The offensive line and Trey Mason together really controlled the game, opened up big holes, pushed the defense around. The defense never got pressure on our quarterback, and there were holes for the running game both in the middle and on the outside, and that allowed Auburn to control the ball, control the clock, and score a lot of points.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I kept thinking all along that this game just set up perfectly for us. I mean, we talked about that last week,
mm-hmm.
that their weaknesses were our strengths. And I do want to kind of point this out, that we don't want to read too much into this game because, you know, yes, they were a highly ranked team with a high-powered offense, but not every team we play the rest of this year is going to have a defense like Texas A&M's. And so we can't expect to go out there and throw 45 points up on the board every time we play a game. It would be nice. But remember, their defense was like last in a whole lot of categories.
No, but at the same time, their offense was so good, it made it a shootout. But they did have a bigger weakness than any team that was in the top 10 last week, that's for sure.
Yeah, I just don't want to get too carried away and say, well, we beat Texas A&M, we can beat anybody. That may be true, but the big part of the reason we beat Texas A&M was because we were capable of scoring at least 45 points on them, and we're not going to score 45 on everybody.
No, so. But I think the other part of that is going into that stadium against those players and that team and beating them is going to give this Auburn team a gigantic amount of confidence.
Well, there's no doubt about that. Absolutely.
Against anybody they play, wherever they play, whatever style the game is.
All right. Have we put the quarterback controversy to rest?
Yeah, that lasted about 5 minutes. That's over. There is no quarterback controversy. Marshall is the man. He was excellent in this game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was great running the ball, just like against Ole Miss. Really took advantage of the defense, got in the end zone, made him pay when they were focusing too much on Mason. And then at the same time, he was pretty good throwing the ball. especially as the game was on the line, he made some big throws.
Yeah, he had some big negative plays, but he kind of tends to make up for those later on. I mean, that was something that, for example, Cam Newton never really did much, was give you several big glaring negatives in the same game. And Marshall tends to do that every game almost, but then he kind of makes up for it. And I'm thinking, for example, the big fumble was critical because it was early in the game and we were trading body blows back and forth with him. And if we had driven down and scored on that drive, we would have been up at least – I forget if we'd been up one or two scores, or we wouldn't have fallen down two scores because we ended up going down two scores at that point. The fumble was bad. He missed a wide open receiver on the wheel route in the first quarter that would have been a touchdown.
Yep.
He had a couple of overthrows, which he tends to do. But then, for example, that pass in the fourth quarter was a thing of beauty that he just he just nailed. Was it
Marcus Davis?
Marcus Davis, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That was spectacular. So, yeah, he kind of takes with one hand, but he gives so much with the other that you can't demote him.
Well, but the other thing I would say is that at the beginning of the year, the big fear was with him the turnovers, that he was going to be a kind of a crazy gunslinger guy throwing the ball around too much. And he had the one bad fumble he was running. He did not throw an interception. He didn't fumble again. And in that one play near the goal line, I mean, he could have forced it into coverage and he took the sack instead. I wish he would have thrown it away, but I'd rather he take the sack than just chuck it in the end zone where there's five guys standing. So yeah. I think he was very calm. He never looked rattled in the game. I mean, he you know, when things were loud and we were behind, he was under control and making plays and keeping the team going. And I thought he played very well.
Yeah, speaking of that, I want to ask you your opinion on this. It seemed to me that the only thing that really stopped our offense the entire game was ourselves, either through certain play selection or, penalties or turnovers. I noticed this going in at halftime, and I was mentioning it on Twitter, that when they interviewed Gus on the way into the locker room, he specifically said, "We have to pass the ball more." And everybody watching was thinking, we need to run the ball more, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in the fourth quarter, you could see, I think, why he was saying that was because, John, they had 9 men in the box in the fourth quarter. And we were still running on them, by the way, but they had 9 men in the box.
Because that's the only thing that would work for them.
And even then, it wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
Even then. So, yeah. So, I mean, in the whole third quarter, we were trying to establish the pass first, and it was hit or miss, right? I mean,
yeah.
And in the fourth quarter, it looked like he basically just said, "We know we can run. Let's run."
Mm-hmm.
Is that your evaluation?
Yeah, but then also we made a couple of big throws that.
Well, that's true. Up
him. So, I mean, the screen pass play to Sammy Coates, where he kind of faked one way and came back the other way.
Oh, it's beautiful.
That was a huge touchdown.
Beautiful, beautiful.
It was a gigantic turning point in the game.
That scheme. That is Gus with some salt and pepper shakers. At Waffle House, drawing something up at 2 o'clock in the morning is what that play, that kind of play is.
It is, and I mean, and you have to appreciate it. Gus Malzahn offense is the kind of thing. If you love football, you have to appreciate it over the course of a season. You have to watch all the games and watch how it develops and how it just adds on a little bit and a little bit and a little bit every week, and just see how good it really is, because you don't get the whole package at the beginning, and you have to. If you watch it at the end, you won't know all the steps it took to get there. But I just really appreciate seeing every week how they bring in something different and wrinkle it a little bit, and they take advantage of what the defense is doing.
Well, you know, some coaches are network dramas where everything's reset at the end. Some coaches are sitcoms, let's be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I'm leaving a space here where I can do the butthead sound for Bielema. And then basically Gus is HBO because he gives you a building drama that is interconnected and things develop all over the course of the season and then a big finish, hopefully. So
I like it.
All right.
One of the other big things in the game was the defensive line. We mentioned them earlier, but they were tremendous in this game. Got great pressure on Manziel without having to blitz a lot. just bringing four guys most of the time in the backfield, disrupting him, chasing around. And we were worried about that, and you could see it in the game. He made a ton of plays with just the running around. I mean, he killed us with that sometimes.
Oh, he does that little loop-de-loop in the backfield that drives me crazy, where he dodges one guy and he runs into the path of another, and almost anybody else, even Cam, would get hit by the second guy, and he does that reverse loop. And it's always so funny, too, because he has the ball in one hand and he has both hands out like he's flapping his wings. You notice that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He does his little ballet pirouette around, but you can't get him. You fall at his feet. It drives me crazy.
To me, the player he resembles the most is Doug Flutie.
Mm-hmm.
That when Doug Flutie played at Boston College, won the Heisman Trophy, he has a lot of the same escapability, get away from people, run around in the backfield, but still, like, keep his eyes downfield, throw the ball 40 yards downfield and hit somebody in stride and make a big play. I think that's the guy he compares to me. And he is so dangerous when he's running around. You could see later in the game, Auburn stopped rushing at field so much. It kind of did the rush up and hold and make a little bowl around him thing to try to keep him from running outside. But then he's so much he's better now than he was last year.
Mm-hmm.
Manziel won the Heisman last year. He's a much better passer right now than he was last year. And so then if you just do that, if you just hold or contain him, then he could stand in the pocket and pick you apart. Because you can't contain Mike Evans for 6 seconds.
No. You know what he reminds me of is it's like a basketball player, particularly like a guard that's running around the court, coming off screens, looking for that one little window when he can stop and take a clear shot.
Mm-hmm.
And when Manziel's running around the backfield, getting away from this lineman, getting away from this linebacker, he'll find that one little spot where there's nobody right in his face, and he will plant and throw the ball 40 yards down the field for a touchdown in that one little window of opportunity. And that's what it makes me think of like a Michael Jordan running around off of screens and hitting that shot, you know?
Sure. That's a good analogy. We had some good plays from the receivers this game. We talked about Sammy Coates making big plays, but also the drop at one point that drove me crazy.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And another play where he and Marshall weren't on the same page, I think, and didn't complete the pass, but he's clearly kind of emerged as the number one guy.
Yeah.
He's it.
Yeah.
The rotation at receiver is pretty set. You know, it's Coates. They play Ricardo Lewis a lot, play Bray, and they play Marcus Davis.
Mm-hmm.
Those are kind of the guys that they're going to get the ball to at the receiver position.
Yeah, when he dropped that ball, I thought of you because you made a very strong stress point about how when we get those plays against A&M, we have to make them. And this is why I said that I felt like we should have won this game by more, because there were a handful of moments in this game that I thought we could have gotten more points and something would go wrong. There was the near fumble when we were right down on the goal line, ended up with a field goal early.
Mm-hmm.
There was the dropped pass by Coates. There was the wide open missed receiver on the wheel route. There was just time after time that we could have gotten more points than we did. But it's just so weird. Football is such a fickle sport. You just never know how fortune's going to shine, because when we got the penalty that where Trey Mason scored the touchdown that didn't count,
mm-hmm.
And then we got backed up and backed up, I thought, well, here comes another field goal. And we got a touchdown. So you just never know, right?
That's right.
And honestly, I wanted to say this too. On the final drive, when we hit, I guess it was Marcus Davis for the big first down?
Yep.
You know, it was second and I think on first down we had run Trey for about a yard or something. So it was third. It was second and nine. And then – honestly, if I had been calling the plays and it's second and nine on that drive, I probably would have run the ball three times thinking I can get 3 yards every time I run the ball and one of them might go for more than that. But instead, Gus goes to the pass and he gets that great pass to Marcus Davis. So, again, I just, you know, maybe I'm just not as good of a football coach as I'd like to think, you know, but what would you have done? Would you have called two passes on second and nine, third and nine, or would you have just tried to run the ball three times there, knowing it's the final drive?
But we're also in a situation where we're trying to run out the clock and not give the ball back to A&M, too. That was the other reason to think run.
Mm-hmm.
And
they were up nine-man front, so bear that in mind, too.
That's right. But, I mean, the other part of this is that, just like the Mississippi State game, that drive at the end of the game, Marcus Davis is a true freshman, is a guy they went to, got him the ball, made a play.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that guy was money in Mississippi State, and he was money this week. That was a huge catch.
Yeah.
What did you think about the way we used Jeremy Johnson in this game?
Was there a way that we used Jeremy Johnson? I mean, he came in once, right, and handed off. And then he came in again, and he threw an incomplete pass that was almost an interception. Did he come in a third time?
I think so, but I'm not positive.
I remember him twice. I remember him handing off, and I remember him throwing that pass that kind of like he tried to fit it in to a guy that was really tightly covered, and it almost got intercepted.
Yep, that was a scary.
So
scary play.
You got to think at that point, Gus thought, yeah, I really don't need to do anything that increases the likelihood of a turnover. You know, I need to play it kind of close. It's funny. I mean, in a game where you think we're just going to be letting it all fly, right? You're just going to let it all hang out. There was a certain degree of conservatism and caution to our game plan.
Well, but I think that developed because we were standing toe-to-toe with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it had been obvious that we were kind of outmatched and that they could keep scoring and, you know, we couldn't keep up with them, that's the point where you get aggressive and start doing stuff. But it was obvious that they couldn't stop us running the ball and we were going to be able to stay with them. They weren't going to pull away. So I think at that point they reined in all the aggressive stuff and say, we just need to play our game and not – we need to keep getting first downs, keep the ball away from them, and keep scoring. So,
well, what did you think about Jeremy Johnson? Would you have even had him near, you know, in the game at all? Or
we talked about this last week with the redshirt thing. I mean, he's an eligible player now. I get it. We want to play him a couple snaps on the road at A&M so he can see what it's like. But I might have waited and tried to give him a whole series of plays at least, right, where you – we get the ball to 20 one time or something, and you put him in and, you know, let him run three plays in a row so he gets his feet wet. But
I guess there's something to be said for him being able to look back in a year or two and say, I was in the game on the field against Texas A&M at Kyle Field.
Sure. And I got, you know, I played, it was, this is the biggest thing is he's been out on the field on the road, an SEC game. And it's really loud trying to, you know, line up the offense, a call to play and stuff, and that's worth something.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's a 2013 player now, so we just have to trust the Gus.
Well, on the other side of the Jeremy Johnson thing is we're playing Florida Atlantic this weekend, and we get way ahead, we're going to see he's going to play a bunch this week.
So. I'm going to ask you about that in a minute. I've got to say this about Texas A&M's offense. I was studying their offense extensively in the like three or four times I've watched part of this game now. And I would describe Texas A&M's offense as it is an intricately constructed system designed to maximize the benefits of never getting called for holding.
Jeez. There's holding on every play in football if you want there to be. So
not every, but on so many of their big plays, you'd see their receiver running toward the end zone, and behind him is an Auburn guy on the ground with an A&M guy, like got him in a full Nelson. It's ridiculous.
I gotta say this: the Texas A&M offensive line, there was some holding in the game that didn't get called, yes. But the Texas A&M offensive line is very good.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the tackles is Jake Matthews is going to be a top 15 pick in the NFL draft. And that's the guy that Ladarius Owens abused at the end of the game and went by and got Johnny Manziel.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that, you know, Auburn's defensive line was going up against one of the best offensive lines in the country, and they went through them and over them and around them all game long. That's what was most impressive. I think a lot of people thought that they would shut Auburn's defensive line out, that we would get anywhere near him. But that, you know, like what happened last year, and that wasn't the case. They were by him then the whole game. And I think that says a lot about, you know, the players themselves, but also about the coaching. I mean, I think Rodney Gardner's made a gigantic difference there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So we ended up running 85 plays, I believe. Is that right? I think it was 85. And I really thought that we were going to be going slower than that. In fact, you know, the CBS guys made a great deal about how they said two different things. One, they said that you know, I think it was Gary Danielson, who I like. I mean, a lot of people crack on him and make fun of him and criticize him. But I think Gary does a pretty decent job. I don't think he's as biased as people want to say. I think some people hear what they want to hear when they're emotional. But I've got to add this. I'm sorry. I'd forgotten something I got to add, which is talking about holding. After the game, I've been hearing a lot of Texas A&M people complaining about the phantom horse collar call. Mm-hmm. And I just want to say, Texas A&M fans whining and crying that a penalty or a missed penalty cost them the game. You're fitting into the SEC just perfectly, boys. You're fitting in right next to Alabama and Georgia, just like you were born to be in the SEC. Congratulations on that. And who was it? Somebody also pointed out, I thought this was really good. It may have been one of the guys on the Auburn sports list that they didn't expect to be, you know, have two losses already. And they were saying to him, you know, well, now you really, you know, you had a charmed life last year, but now you kind of see how life is in the SEC, that you're not going to win the national championship every year and you're going to have a really, really hard time going undefeated. You know, it takes almost a miracle. They were telling their A&M friends at the game, you know, in 2010, as good as Cam was, as good as Fairley was, as good as the coaches were and good and every, you know, as Gus and everything, we still had to have two or three sort of miraculous moments in that season to go undefeated.
That's right.
And so you just, you know, it's something like, you know, you've got the Heisman Trophy winner. You got this great offense. You got this great team and everything. Welcome to, you know, fourth place in the West. So that's the SEC.
Well, here's the bigger question, though. A year from now, Texas A&M, no Johnny Manziel.
Yeah.
No Jake Matthews. You know, Evans, is he a junior?
I don't know.
I'm looking real quick. But how good a team is that going to be? Evans is a sophomore, so I don't think he redshirted. So he's got one more year. But say 2 years from now, no Manziel, no first round draft pick offensive lineman, no Mike Evans. Mm-hmm. Who on that team scares you at all?
Yeah, well, I mean, unless their next quarterback is pretty good, but not like
– Well, but that's what I'm saying. Not just pretty good. Mm-hmm. I mean, their next quarterback is going to have to be like one of the best three or four quarterbacks in the country.
Yeah.
Because the rest of their team, their running backs are okay. But do you think there's a big difference between their running backs and Ole Miss's running backs?
No. And you know what I was already hearing is some A&M people saying, well, you know, last year Sumlin had Sherman's players. Again, it's silly. It's a silly, silly thing to say, but y'all are fitting into the SEC just perfect.
The bigger thing that was going on is, you know, a lot of the SEC was bad last year. I mean, the SEC was very divided. It was either really great teams or really terrible teams last year. I mean, Auburn, Arkansas, you know, Mississippi State were not good last year. Ole Miss was okay.
Tennessee.
But I mean, the other teams that A&M played were bad. And so I think that a little bit of an illusion for them. So the other part is, again, last year they got way ahead of everybody at the beginning of every game with their offense, and their defense could just pin their ears back and pass rush the whole game.
That's right.
When you have to stand up to SEC teams and play the run for four quarters, it's a different kind of deal, and they're not ready for that.
Well, talking about illusion, that was the other thing I was getting to there, was that we ran 85 plays, I think. And it was interesting because Gary Danielson was saying that we claim to be a hurry-up tempo team, but he said it's actually an illusion. Or he was saying the Texas A&M coaches were saying that we act like a spread hurry-up team, but actually we're a more conventional power team. Now, you and I and most of our listeners understand that we are a power team. We're a power play-action, run-first, downhill running team that uses the spread and tempo to spice things up. We're not the pedal to metal team that we kind of have thought Gus was going to make us, but that's okay because he does what he thinks he has to do, I think, within certain bounds. But what's your reaction to sort of saying it's an illusion?
Well, I mean, I think people have this impression that spread team means you run side to side all the time, or you're trying to – you put guys out in space all the time. You're doing the stuff that Oregon does. Mm-hmm. And so it's just – it's a spread thing, but it's different. I mean, we run – a lot of the stuff Auburn does is old school power football. Up well, the, you know, off tackle, you know, running the ball up the middle, that kind of stuff. And there's a lot of basic plays, counter and sweep and that kind of stuff that have been in football for 100 years. And
veer.
That's right. And so those kind of things are basic things in the Gus offense, and they're the foundation of everything else is built on. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think this just, people have this perception that a spread team is as always these little guys running fast on the outside, and that's what causes the confusion.
Well, I believe that Gus addressed some of this in his post game. He said that one of the things that we did in the fourth quarter was to spread it out wide a little bit more. I think if nothing else, that forced their defense to sort of loosen up a little bit, because even though we were going to run, we at least, you know, and I haven't gone back and watched the fourth quarter yet. I haven't gotten to that point yet, But that was what he was saying in postgame, was that we ran more spread formation in the fourth quarter to, I guess, to try to get that 9-man front at least spread thin if we couldn't get him to back off. So anyway.
All right, moving on. What does this mean for Auburn, this win mean for Auburn the rest of the season? And in the big picture of getting the program back on its feet, rebuilding, coming back from the – you know, with the bottom of the Marianas Trench where we were at the end of last year.
Well, it's got to mean we're at least a year ahead of schedule, doesn't it?
I do. I mean, you and I talked about this in the off season. What were our expectations, and when do we think Auburn to be competitive again? And we thought it would be next year before we were capable of playing this kind of game.
Well, when you're as bad in the Marianas Trench, as you put it, as we were last year, you have to think it's a climb up. What this really makes you realize is that we were not a bad group of players last year, more or less. We were just a bad team.
Well, and I'm going to go back and read a few of our columns from last year. We said this multiple times. There was talent on that football team.
Yes.
They were bad, but they weren't that bad.
Right.
And so I think a lot of it is, you know, excellent coaching. There's some new players, especially, you know, huge improvements at quarterback. But I think part of it is, you know, the players that were there or the players that were there before went through that or motivated and they were fired up. And this is the other part. Going into that Texas A&M game, the A&M players and the fans were incredibly overconfident. Mm-hmm. They had destroyed us last year. They thought they were going to be destroying us every year for the next couple of years. They thought it would be just the same. At the same time, the Auburn players had gotten their teeth kicked in and gotten embarrassed on national TV and, you know, gotten absolutely destroyed in that game and taunted for the rest of the year about it. And they wanted to go into that stadium and stick it to A&M.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but in the big picture, you're right. It means we're really ahead of schedule. We thought it'd be a year before we were competitive. I mean, it's insane, but Auburn's is competing for the SEC championship now.
That's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous, and yet it's true.
I mean, it's ridiculous to think about, but it's the fact because we're the only Alabama's undefeated. We're the only other team in the West with one loss. Yeah. The Western Championship is going to come down to the Iron Bowl.
Yeah, as long as we don't mess anything up. I mean, we still got to keep winning.
Yes, that's right. It's possible. I mean, we could – you know, but, you know, things happen. It's possible we could lose some other games and it doesn't matter, the Iron Bowl. But right now, that's how it is. It's, you know, it's looking like the winner of that game against Missouri.
Well, we control our own destiny. I mean, we've lost to LSU, but LSU has two losses. So as long as we keep winning, the tiebreaker doesn't matter.
And LSU still has to play Alabama and Texas A&M.
Right. And we get Alabama at home. Good God, we're talking about this. No, this is impossible. But what I mean is, so even though we've got a loss and Alabama doesn't, all we have to do is beat Alabama. We each got a loss and we have the tiebreaker.
That's right.
So we do control our own destiny. If we win every game the rest of the way, I keep stopping and thinking, are we talking about this?
Well, but like, back up a step. The only ranked team we have left to play is Alabama.
That's just astonishing.
None of the other teams are ranked.
Yeah. Well, and I was going to say that at some point, And in fact, I was going to say that right now. Who would have thought, even, you know, even a week or two ago, that we would be saying that Florida and Georgia are, quote, also receiving votes, unquote. LSU is ranked below us, and we are one rank removed from the top 10 in the BCS.
That's crazy.
It is absolutely insane, and yet it's true. I you know, my wife asked me when we were at the mall Sunday, she says, well, how high do you think Auburn's going to go in the polls? Because we were 24. And I said, oh, you know, 17, 18, 11. Well, that's what the coaches put us 17, which is ridiculous. You know, I believe it was the Juice is Good who is one of our brother's shows, right? He's on one of the shows. He said, you know, it would be great if there was some way that we could demonstrate, you know, that all, you know, who actually should be ranked higher between Auburn and Texas A&M. Oh, wait.
Yeah, that poll didn't make any sense. I mean, to me, I love Auburn, and I'm going to cheer for the rest of my life. I'm not sure we're the 11th best team in the country, but
no,
we're playing really well right now, and there's not a lot of – I mean, here's the way to look at it this way. How many teams are you afraid of on a neutral field that you're not afraid of, but you think Auburn would probably not beat? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, at home we could beat Alabama, but let's on a neutral field, Alabama, Oregon,
Florida State.
I don't want any part of them.
No.
That's all that chainsaw it's execution.
It's always a happy day when Dabo goes down and goes down hard. I was pointing out that West Virginia thought that Florida State was being easy on Clemson.
That's right. So, I mean, Alabama, Oregon, Florida State, Ohio State, I'm not scared of them.
I know.
Not a bit. No. You know, Baylor. This is a little Texas A&M-ish to them.
Yeah.
I mean, they're more balanced, but they've got a defense. Stanford's tough. I mean, I think on a neutral field that would be entertaining. They don't have the skill position people, I think, but they're really good. They're really, really solid. But, I mean, other than that, yeah.
Who's going to come trying to hire Gus in the next few months? Anybody?
No. I mean, because the – what jobs are going to be available? I mean, Southern Cal and Texas. Gus is not NFL coaching material. They're not interested in him right away.
I could see Gus in LA. I don't want to, but I mean, I can't see him at Texas at all, but I could see him at.
Gus is a little more simple Southern guy than you think, and I don't think he can see himself in LA.
Yeah,
I think he's where he wants to be in terms of football stuff. So
you think the big money people at Texas that are getting tired of Mack Brown and they want that exciting brand of football and they look at what Gus just did to the cross-state rival, or Texas is looking at Gus?
I mean, they might call him, but again, I don't think that's going to happen.
I hope not. Isn't it funny? Almost every coach we've had over the last few years and so, there's always been a point. Where we start wondering who's going to try to hire him.
Except for Chizik. I don't think Gus is NFL material. I don't think they'd be interested in him, and I don't think he's interested in that. And I don't think there's a college job that he looks at and goes, yeah, I would do that. So you never say never, but I would be shocked.
Good, because I think he's one of the best coaches in the country right now, and I'm so happy to be proven right when you and I said hire Gus. Forget Petrino, hire Gus.
Yeah, you were banging Gus from number one from the beginning. He was your number one candidate. There's a couple other guys I wanted more, but he was on the list for sure, and he's been better than I thought. I thought he'd be good. He's better than I thought he would be.
Yeah, I think so.
A little bit of a history lesson now. When was the last Auburn road win that was this big?
Well, you got to say the 2010 Iron Bowl, but that's a special thing. And just in terms of like a regular season, middle of the season game, honestly, I think the 94 and 2007 Florida games in the Swamp. But really, 94 is the one that has come to my mind all along, because that's the one where the 94 Florida game, they were number one, undefeated. and we had to go down there. Nobody gave us a chance. That was Terry Bowden's Super Bowl, if you will recall, because we were still on probation. That game even ended with us driving down and scoring at the end, and there was even a conversion on a 10-yard pass, just like in this game, on the middle of the drive. So there were a lot of parallels, and it ended with us tackling Florida, trying desperately to score at the end. So it was the 36-33 game.
It definitely had the shootout qualities of this game, the back and forth, neither team could stop each other kind of thing.
Yeah.
It is tough because, I mean, the last team we beat on the road that was ranked was the game in early 2011 we beat South Carolina on the road.
Yeah.
They were ranked number 9. That's the game where we held the ball a lot or ran the ball down on them a long time.
Dyer, yeah.
And, you know, that was kind of right before we fell off the cliff.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of the last. And that game was a little bit of an illusion, and we were already falling off the cliff. We went on and beat
Florida that year. I mean, we had they weren't very good. But that was the two games that I look back and I'm still kind of surprised we won in 2011 was we beat South Carolina and Florida. I'm glad we kept the South Carolina streak going, though. They still haven't beaten us in the SEC.
That's right. So, but even before that, because the other part is, other than Alabama, we didn't beat a really great team on the road.
That's right.
2010.
Yeah, that's right. They were all at home. You go,
that's right. I mean, Mississippi State, I don't really count that.
No.
I mean, you go back to 2009, didn't beat a great team on the road.
No, West Virginia was at home, and they weren't even a great team, but it was just a great game.
No, it's, I mean, you got 2008.
No. So it's got to be 7 Florida. 07 Florida is the last time. So
I think you're right. I think it's the 2007 Florida game in the Swamp. That's the Gator Chomp game.
Yes. Freshman. freshman from Fort Lauderdale. Wesley Byram.
With the great kick and then taunting the Florida fans after the game with the Gator Chomp.
Two kicks. He had to kick it twice.
Which I'm happy to see the Missouri fans pick that up this weekend. I was proud of them.
I was so proud of Missouri. We're going to get to that in just a minute.
So I think, yeah, I mean, you think that was 6 years ago.
Yeah.
That's the last, you know, we're not counting 2010 Alabama because that was its own kind of deal. But the last regular on a road, you know.
Middle
of the season, beat at a top team on the road that we can make a good analogy to. So,
yeah.
But I like the 94 Florida analogy in terms of the nature of the game and kind of the no one gave us a chance, but there was a shootout and.
But
in that game, Auburn had reasons to be confident, but just that nationally they weren't given the credit.
That was also the game where Chris Domino on Atlanta radio said that if Auburn won that game, monkeys would fly out of his butt. And I've been asking him for 20 years if monkeys were still flying out of his butt. He's learned, right? Never give Auburn fans something to remember. All right, I think that'll do it there. The rest of the episode, we went on to preview the upcoming game, which I think was Florida Atlantic. I'm sure you're not terribly interested in hearing the 2013 Florida Atlantic preview, so we'll leave things off there. We have to thank our patrons who keep shows like this on the air. For as little as a dollar a month, just go to www.auwishbone.com and join the club, join the fun, join the Auburn Wishbone, AU Wishbone. Join the fun, join the AU Wishbone family. Our current supporters include Matthew Flowers, Carl Von Drunker, Samuel Salvatore, and Christopher Burleson, plus Phil Amthor, Ben Spooner, Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, William Glenn Matthews, Gary Grant, Brian Gray, Willie Carden, Tom Anderson, Susan Trawick, Logan Chilton, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Steve Trawick, and Richard Stevens. And then there's William Morgan, Johnny Caldwell, Emmanuel Seaman, WDE Ritchie, Winston Boddy, Clinton Stewart, Christopher Stewart, Mickey B, Phil Davis, Joshua Corbett, John Otsuki, Preston Settle, Daniel Odom, AU Falling Up, Alchemist, Kevin Smith, Clarence Alford, Will Summerford, David Hegler, Theodore Gary, Reynolds Wolf, Joel Beckham, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Ann Kangian, Catherine England, George Gaston, John McCune, David Evers, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer, Sarah Hines, Darius Benton, Rob Morgan, Blake Heron, Hugh Anderson, Stephen Houston, Cato the Barner, Danny Flack, Papa Todd, Russell Milling, Kevin Kenoy, Don Zederman, Ross, Lane Middleton, Shannon Butson, Randall Walker, Shane Bailey, Chris Thrash, Tony Perry, Alex Wynn, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, C.T. Wayne, And finally, Jeremy Minton, Wardam Wade, Spanky, J.W. Rice, Jason Albrick, Mick Vizhakana, Russell Souther, Paul Bankson, Joseph Iliff, Justin Bean, Kevin Mahan, Stephen Wyatt, Trevor Johnson, Auburn Elvis, Robert Drain, Brandon Smith, Royce Alvarez, Thomas Brinson, David Smiley, Matthew Wagstaff, Donnie Reynolds, Wade Carson, Ivor Evans, John Zabachin, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, Darren Pyle, Chris Camo, Ben Amos, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Raines, Nicholas Craig, Joseph Miller, Mark Squire, Chris Brent Rumble, our one-time and anonymous donors. We appreciate you all so much. You keep these shows going. Go to www.auwishbone.com. And now our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.